Hey, Brian.
Hey, Elliot.
What's the talk of the table?
Welcome to the final week of our Zine Month series here on Talk of the Table. Zine Month is almost over, but it is not over just yet because we've got two more projects that we are excited to tell you about. Today, we are diving into the Borg universe with two great projects, a Borg battle royale called Murker of Morks and the cyborg module Dead Internet Theory. Hello and welcome back to Talk of the Table. Today, we are joined by Nishant to talk about his new game, Murker of Morks. Nishant, welcome to the show.
Welcome.
Hey, I'm happy to be here.
Great to have you. We're excited to talk about your game and celebrate more of Zine Month because this is our favorite month of the year.
It's a great month.
So I was immediately enamored by the description of your game as a big Predator Killer of Killers fan. I think that movie is so sick. Could you give us the elevator pitch for Murker of Morks?
Murker of Morks is an adventure module that combines six different Mork Borg style games into a single brutal tournament.
Hell yeah.
And it's inspired by the show Predator Killer of Killers and how it had this storyline about different people from different eras who had managed to defeat a predator alien, and they're all brought together for like a big blood match. And it's like, it's that kind of like very like 80s-ish schlocky kind of like concept that's just like fits right at home in like the Borg style games. Cause it's like, at the end of the day, it's always about bringing people around and like having a wacky time. Beyond like how each Borg game has its own kind of soul and its own kind of like vibe, they all have this kind of inherent undercurrent of like comedy.
Yeah.
It's like, it's always kind of ridiculous. It's always kind of silly. And so I was just like, what if I bring it all together and I bring like that kind of comedy to the forefront where it's just like this big, ridiculous kind of thing. You've got all these people from different worlds, different times being brought into this battle royale that's very like online streamer themed.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, they're all very confused and it's all really weird. And like the entire audience is like goblins and they throw things at you if you mispronounce Mirkbury. And so it's meanwhile, everyone else is allowed to say Morkborg. And so it's like, it's this focus on like comedic things and like silly things while still keeping that kind of intensity and the violence at the core of the Borg system.
I am amazed that no one has ever done the like meta commentary on there are a million Borgs out there. Let's put them all together and make them fight.
And
it's kind of a fun thing. I'm now just thinking like, okay, where are all the Blades in the Dark hacks that I could throw together and make them fight?
Right.
You know what I mean? The Slug Blaster and Girl by Moonlight, you know, going together. But and I'm just reading from your thing. It's the six games that you have in here six games that this is like a compatible adventure with to throw them together are Merkborg, Pirate Borg, Frontier Scum, Court Borg, Vast Grim Horde, and Punk is Dead.
Yes.
Which just the mind spins at those things all coming together.
the reason, like some of the ones we chose are just because they're popular, because it's like Pirate Borg and like Frontier Scum are both really popular and both really iconic in their own way. But it's like specifically one of the people I met up with to work on this is he's a professional GM called Austin Aki.
Mm-hmm.
And we met when we were both running games at PAX U. And we were running two of those board games. We were running Vast Grim and we were running Punk is Dead. And so he's the one who taught me about Vast Grim. And he's the one who like kind of put me in like, oh yeah, this is the headspace for it. This is the kind of like, this is the vibe that you have to kind of bring. And it's just like him and like those games and like all coming together. It just feels like it felt correct to kind of do this. And so a lot of the writing, I think most of the writing, especially when it comes to encounter design, is done by Austin Aki. And he's so wacky and he's so fun. And it's like, it breaks my heart every time I have to cut something of his because it doesn't fit on the page. Because it's just so exuberant, vibrant, in like a violent way.
And when it comes down to how you sort of perform this magic trick of bringing all of these morks into one arena. What does that look like mechanically? How do you make them all play nice together?
I think it comes with the it's trying to have a connecting line in between all these things. And so obviously there's the whole the arena and the progression of it, where it's just like, okay, this is like a blood sport. We're all doing people from six different worlds, and there's six different stages, and there's like, you know, all the sixes, because as one would include in a Borg inspired thing. And so each section pulls from one of the games that's inspired it. And so it's like every player in like the intentioned kind of thing, where it's six players all from different places, they'll have that moment of just like, oh, I know this place. Like, I'm familiar with this. We're in danger. And so it's like, we wanted to kind of give that feeling of like familiarity for one and then confusion for the others.
Mm-hmm.
And then it becomes about just the joy of the lightweight system of board games is that you can have this very laissez-faire attitude, because it's like it's this like thing where it's just like, oh, can I use my heft skill to like knock over these things? And it's just like, yeah, sure. But then it's just like, oh, can I use my heft to see if I can like intimidate this coworker into like giving me the information I need? And I'm just like, yeah, sure,
go for it.
And it's like, it's that kind of yes ending that connects these games together.
I love just how much of this is Mortal Kombat, and like I just keep thinking like Mortal Kombat mixed with like the stages from like Super Smash Bros, but throw in all the Morkborgs.
Yeah,
that's a lot of fun. I think this would,
yeah,
I could also see the thing that I would love to see from this game particularly is a mega game at a convention where you have six different tables all playing each of these Borgs, and then the winners come together into this mega table playing Murker of Morks.
There's been I've talked with some of my friends, some of my compatriots about talking about like a big like Borgpocalypse now, or whatever it's called, or whatever they're kind of rolling with.
Yeah,
but it's like
Borgpocalypse, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so that is good. Being worked on.
Well, got it. It's the natural terminus for this type of thing.
I'm going to steal a question right from your press kit that I think is hilarious, and I want to hear you explain. What's up with the eels?
do you want like the in-world explanation, or do you want like the meta one?
Of course I want the in-world explanation.
The in-world explanation is that the runner of this twisted tournament, Mr. Least, has a strange affinity with these slimy creatures. What could possibly that have to do with any kind of other secrets that he has? The eel imagery is this thing that kind of it appears in every single world, and it has this kind of connecting mechanic associated with it called a time sync, which is like time synchronization, but also you are wasting your time. Where it's like you can kind of have this moment where it's like your character understands where they are and like what's happening. And so it's like they take, instead of like moving towards an objective, they're just like, oh, like, let me interrogate this funky goblin. Like, what does he know? Like, and so it's like, we have this kind of push and pull. And it's like, you can use those time sync points for like dice rolls. But it's like, we also, of course, in the nature of the old school charm of like janky RPGs, we want to be like, oh, if you save up all your time sync points till the end, you can get like secret endings and stuff.
Can I make a prediction? And if it's a spoiler and I'm right, we can cut it or bleep it.
Go ahead.
Is
100%. You are 100% correct. They are several. They are a kind of like this. This like twisted like thing at the end of the game. This is all 100% spoilers. So.
we can bleep it out, and I'm just gonna leave in you saying you are 100% correct.
Just a long string of beeping.
That's really fun.
You just want everyone
really
to know you're
like
correct,
it.
And you know what? That's fine.
And that's why I have a podcast.
when you snipe something from that far away, you want people to know about it.
Oh, that's really fun. I love the comedy angle on this. I'm always enamored by like when people infuse comedy into game design. Do you have any other thoughts on like where the comedy comes from and like in the writing or the game design and like how you made this a funny but like violent and over the top sort of game?
I think on one hand, it's like, I want to say it's just like, oh yeah, it's just like me. I'm just so funny. But it's like, I think it's like, I do have an affinity for kind of comedy games. And a lot of the games that I've kind of, I've played, I've run for people, and I've played as a player have all been, some of the best games in the space are horror or dark themed.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's cool as hell. That's awesome. I love Mothership. I love Blades in the Dark. I love Dread. Big fan of that. And it's like, all that like innovation and all that like really cool boundary pushing game design is all kind of situated in that kind of dark, nasty space. And it's like, that's awesome and that's amazing. But personally, I'm not very, very like suited to horror movies. I'm mm-hmm. definitely one of those ones who I'm just like, like the whole time. Like,
no.
I have
no.
like crunch up. Like, so I don't be still my heart.
Yeah.
Which is really funny because it's like my partner loves horror movies. And so it's like I would get I've been building a tolerance recently.
My wife likes to just look up. She won't watch horror movies, but she likes to look up the like Wikipedia, like the plot summaries. And she'll leave a plot summary and come up to me and be like, I'm very scared right now. And I'm like, you just read a Wikipedia plot summary.
And sometimes it's like the mind creates the monsters you can't see.
The mind creates the monsters, 100%. And that's, you know, probably one of the reasons why horror works so well in audio fiction, but also like in tabletop. Like the less facets you have available to you in terms of storytelling, the more, you know, scary and unknown can like be played up.
And it's like, that is 100%. I think you're 100% correct. And it's like, for me, RPGs have always been about having a goofy time with my friends. And so it's like, that's where I kind of approached these things. And it's like, the first time I ran a tabletop RPG was, it was like a D&D 5e campaign that was, I made it myself. And it was super edgy. Every single character started with a curse and they had like some like super dark path they had to tread. And it's like, I made the mistake of having one of my friends, the curse is like, they can't get drunk. But it's like they're always thirsty.
Mm.
And so it's like, you know, it's very, very evocative. And they're just like, I'm going to scam people at bars, at drinking competitions. And I'm just like, what? And then all of the players immediately are like, this is our plan. And this is what we're going to do. And they had an amazing time. And it's like, there's a lot of things that were stacked against me. I had invited like six people, expecting four to show up. All six showed up. Two or three of them are known for being like guys who've got like bits ready to go. And so it's like, it just became like joke after joke. And they were just goofing off the whole time. And I was over there like stressing, like, no, guys, like, we're trying to pull together. We got the storyline. We're trying to get this like,
this is dark and edgy, guys. Started. Don't you understand?
Yeah,
you're all
yeah,
cursed.
But it's like at the end of that kind of at that session, I was just like, they had a lot of fun. And it's like, I wanted to have that fun with them.
Mm. Yeah.
And it's like, I want to be there being goofy with them. Like, that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
And so it's like, that's why I kind of lean a lot of the games that I make, which is funny, not the games that I run. A lot of the games that I make are focused a lot on like comedy and like being silly and improvisational and pushing people to make bad decisions.
Mm-hmm. So Nishant, getting into the sort of logistics of it all, where are you funding? When are you funding? And what can people get when they back Murker of Morks?
Yeah, so I'm funding on Kickstarter. It's on the 17th of February. This game kind of came together pretty fast, and so we wanted to at least give it some time in the oven where we'd like let it properly develop its flavors. We're getting together we've got a digital zine and then a physical zine, which we're working with Plus One EXP. I'm super grateful to them for believing in this project, and all the people I've met at Plus One EXP are super lovely people. We've also got stickers. We've got this fun idea for stickers you can put on your character sheet, showing which stage you managed to beat in the thing as like a kind of like postage card souvenir kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
We also have game show style like stamps that you can put on your thing, a little name tag.
Sure, yeah.
And so it's like, we're working with some amazing artists to kind of get that stuff together. tragically, no cool long sleeve t-shirt with eels going down the sides yet.
Yes.
Those are expensive. And so, you know, maybe tell your friends, get those stretch goals in. So I can bully Tony into letting me print a t-shirt. Not a t-shirt, a long sleeve shirt.
If everyone buys 6 copies of Murker of Morks, and then also a corresponding board game to go along with them, and then you send them to your friends, and then each of them runs their own game, and then they send a representative to your house, now you have your own Murker of Morks real life tournament, and the campaign does so well that now we get the cool shirts with Mr. Least running down the side.
And then speaking of the last thing, the special tier that we got prepared is the Cosmic Eel tier. Very exciting, very interesting. And we wanted the game to be compatible with other board games. And so we have in the actual book, we have like tips and tricks of like incorporating characters and getting how to design a scenario that will fit right in into the campaign. So you can just mix and match with whatever you like. If you don't think popping up in a performance review in the middle of your Bloodsport is funny, you can just switch out Korborg for whatever you want, Ninja Borg, Ragnarborg, whatever you like. Mm-hmm. But on the Cosmic Eel tier, we will put a character and an encounter from a game of your choice, and we'll put it right into the game.
Mm. Oh, hell yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. That's tragically fun. We can only do 6 of those because the printing costs, because, you know, every page is money.
I was excited to see that you're working with +1. That's great. We love +1. They're big friends of the pod. In working with +1, why did y'all decide Zine Month was the right fit for this game, crowdfunding during Zine Month?
It's actually really funny because I was talking to +1 EXP about a different game that I wanted to publish with them, and they really loved it. And they're just like, oh yeah, we totally want to like publish this game. And they said like, oh, but have you ever like got a game published before? And I was just like, no, not really. And it's just like, and they were just like, oh, we've got like Zine Month coming up, and or like anything you can do, like a small project, we'd love to like help support it. And I was just like, well, I do have this funky idea.
Well, now that you mention it,
I do have this Bloodsport in my back pocket.
I can very much imagine Murker of Morks and, you know, the Borgpocalypse on the rack at the +1 EXP booth at the next convention. Like, that very much fitting. Fits the brand.
Yeah. I think that's also like one of the things that I really loved about +1 EXP is just like going to their booth and seeing all like the names I recognize of like friends and like other cool industry people I look up to, like Vidyasa Violetti and I forget everyone else's name because I'm that person.
Viditya is the only one.
Viditya is the only one you need. Yeah.
The designer of Hellwailers, and of course everyone really loves Mythic Bastion Land. Those are all games I'm infatuated with, and seeing them all in one place, I'm just like, okay, these guys are cool as hell.
Yeah.
Yeah, they rule.
That is always a fun thing at, like, especially walk around conventions. You'll stumble upon, like, a booth that has, like, 3 or 4 games that you know and love, and you're like, oh, these people are cool. This is a cool table. I didn't know who you were before, but I know you're a cool table now. We talked a little bit earlier about the team that you have assembled for this, but do you want to shout out, like, the entire team that you have and who is participating in making Murker of Morks come to life?
We've got designing and editing, which is by me, Ty. Writing and encounter design is done by Austin Ackie, a New York-based pro GM I met at PAX U, and we were rooming together, and we had a wacky, grand old time, and so that's how I met. And then Kieran Anderson has done a layout and spot illustrations. Kieran is an old friend. We've worked on some projects in the past, little things here and there. A great illustrator, a fantastic, really creative layout designer and graphic designer, and so I was just like, for this kind of energy, I was just like, I gotta call Kieran. 2 other names that I'm working with for the first time: Pepe Reyes, who is a Philippines-based artist who did our cover, and that cover is so amazing. Like, I saw their art, and I was just like, I need a phantasmagoric mural made by this person, and it's just like, they're super cool, and they're like really, really friendly, and so it's like, I'm just super glad to get them on this project, and I'm super glad that I'm going to be able to like sprinkle their art throughout, because they have this great like mosaic framing style that they do with their artwork, where it's not just the piece, it's the border and it's the shape of it that's all kind of beautifully illustrated. And then we've got character illustrations done by G. Gilrain, an amazing character artist. They have a very characterful style when it comes to character illustrations, like exaggerated proportions and great shapes. And so just like for a kind of comedic bent of this game, it's like definitely like that's who I want drawing these characters.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you may see the occasional horrifying Photoshop monstrosity that is done by Kieran. So ominous thing to look forward to.
As we kind of round the corner here, Nishant, anything you want to make sure that we touch on about the game that we haven't already before we kind of round out to our last question?
The only thing is that like the original idea for it was going to be this kind of nasty one shot that's like 4 hours long. Mm-hmm. But like as we tried to fit in six different sections into a 4 hour like time block, we kind of realized that like that is silly and not going to happen. And yeah. So we made sure to kind of have a little timing tutorial where it's just like, if you're just doing one session, we're gonna do three sections. And so you'll do an intro, you'll do an outro. And then the middle section is you roll a die to see which game you get. And then if you want to do the full six, we suggest two or three sessions, depending on how quickly and how scatterbrained your players are.
You can really scale this to you can do it as a one shot, do it as the full thing over a couple of sessions, and like really get to see all the stages from all the different worlds.
Yeah. And so it's like, we wanted it to be something that like the least chance of being able to be demolished by the looming threat of scheduling. And so, cause we wanted people to run it over and over again. And so we wanted to have the modularity where you can switch in your own favorite board games, and also variables and different things that can pop up and happen in each section. And so focusing on something that is short, but repeatable is like the goal of this, like when it comes to our encounters.
Nishant, the last question we want to ask you is one that we ask everyone who comes on the show. And that question is, what are you bringing to the table? And normally this is just a cute way for us to ask for a recommendation of anything, you know, movie, a book, going out and taking a walk. But for Zine Month, we'd love it if you could recommend another project that is funding during Zine Month that you think people should check out.
I've got two in mind. It's from a good friend, Jeff, from When Suddenly Games. He's got a game called The Crypt is Open. He's a great artist. He's a great designer. And he's been such a kind soul to me personally, because it's like he's worked at a local game shop. He hosted like a dev night, and I went there for local Atlanta devs. And I went there and he connected me with other people, and he was super generous with his time. I want nothing but the best for Jeff. And so The Crypt is Open is a super sick, pushing back the pulp like horror apocalypse with magic. And it's this great system for these like cool, funky encounters where you beat up cryptids.
Hell yeah.
we'll throw the link for that in the show notes so everyone can check it out.
Also, I have a friend, Irving Berlin, doing a funky little reverse sale on itch.io for their game Townies, where you are a town in the Midwest and you are sad because people are leaving and you are deteriorating. And it's very evocative.
Mm. Very cool. We'll throw some links for that in the show notes as well. Nishant, thanks so much for coming to the table. Do you want to let people know where they can find you online if they're looking for you? And also just remind us where we can get and when we can back Murker of Morks.
Yeah, I'm mostly on Blue Sky. It's Art by Recluse. That's Recluse is my little pseudonym. And that's what I go by a lot of on online spaces. And Murker of Morks is on Kickstarter, starting February 17th, and it's going to be funding for 30 days, even though it's sneaking outside of Zine Month, but, you know.
As long as you're dipping the toe in, it's a Zine Month
project.
It starts
in February. It's February enough.
Excellent. We'll throw all of those links in the show notes below so people can find you online and also grab a copy of Murker of Morks and smash all their Borgs together and make them kiss in a death match. Nishant, thank you so much for coming to the table.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and best of luck.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Sam Dunnewald, and I'm here to tell you about Dice Exploder, a podcast where each week me and a rotating co-host take one tabletop RPG mechanic, just one mechanic, and break it down as deep as we possibly can. If you love thinking about role-playing games and how they work, this is the show for you. Come listen to me talk to Alex Roberts about love and pity, John Harper about elegance and layout, and Mikey Ham about, what else? Exploding dice! It's an interview show, a review show, a design show, and most of all, a show for anyone who loves these games. Come on down and join us. Find Dice Exploder at DiceExploder.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome back to Talk of the Table. Today, we are joined by David H.K. Jackson to talk about his new project, Dead Internet Theory. David, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Welcome.
Great. Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm doing great this morning.
Thanks for coming on. How's Zine Month treating you so far?
It's good. So previous years, I did itch funding. And so this whole getting a teaser page and doing promo earlier is new for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun to, you know, learn the skills involved in the crowdfunding game and in the game design game, as well as just making the games and playing them and stuff.
So to start us off, David, could you give us the short pitch for this project, Dead Internet Theory?
So Dead Internet Theory is a adventure module for the Morkborg hack Cyborg. It's a cyberpunk heavy metal setting, and the adventure module is based on different interests I have in the cyberpunk genre, you know, different influences that I draw from. It's basically about residents of a virtual heaven start to disappear, and PCs get the call from some concerned family members. From there, they dive down into a deep cyberpunk rabbit hole of dance clubs and conspiracy theories and, of course, eldritch horror.
Losing people from a cyberpunk heaven is a very cool place to start for this. I see a lot of fun happening there.
Yeah, it's a really fun idea. Yeah.
What's really great about Zine Month is that there is such a wide variety of types of projects. There are like solo games and GM-less games and GM'd games. There are, you know, one shots. There are, you know, 10 shots. There are full length games. And there are also, you know, original games, original systems, and also like supplements. What made you so excited about Cyborg, and why did you want to make a module for that system?
Well, yeah, it's definitely the setting. It's very immersive. I think the wild success of Morkborg and all the various hacks come from the feeling it evokes. It's not necessarily super innovative game design. It's not. It's about creating a sense of atmosphere and feeling that's very immersive. And conducive to telling fun stories, right? It's like, it's so over the top, kind of heavy, that it becomes comical. So you can be joking around as well as having like some exciting drama.
Yeah.
And that to me leads to really fun gameplay. I started out doing Morkborg as like a backup game for my group. Like if everybody couldn't show up, well, like, oh, there's like a 7 zillion Morkborg modules that I've read. And then like, let's just throw a one page dungeon in there and we'll play for tonight. I guess I prefer cyberpunk and sci-fi more. I'm like a big sci-fi person, although obviously I like fantasy as well. The module itself kind of just percolated over time. Ideas that I thought were cool. Like I said, I drew from different cyberpunk influences, like a Philip K. Dick book, Ubik, has a similar idea of like a virtual retirement home where a bunch of people are about to, like, a senior is on their deathbed. They get cryogenically frozen and uploaded to this digital utopia, and it's like a detective novel within the digital utopia.
Oh, that's rad. I gotta check that out. That sounds great.
Yeah, yeah, Philip Dick is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the grandfather of cyberpunk, but still very cyberpunk nonetheless.
Yeah, I read Altered Carbon like 20 years ago, and it's sick. So what all is going into this adventure? What can people expect to find within the pages of Dead Internet Theory to bring to their table?
Well, so the core product is, it's a dungeon, right? It's a pretty sizable dungeon that is the cult enclave underneath this mega church finance firm in Psy. It's Fideistic Transformations is the name of the corporation. It's part of the cyborg sort of universe. There's a lot of settings surrounding it, but in fact, a lot of that is stretch goals too, so it's hard to say exactly what will be in it. It looks like we're on pace to hit most of the core things like the club and some other satellite locations around it that kind of tie the whole story and the conspiracy together. But ultimately, it centers around this large dungeon of a cult-worshipping alien gods underneath the basement of one of the most powerful corporations in the setting.
Really, any Merkborg hack, and especially like Merkborg and Cyborg, have such a strong art style. Like, it, the second you pick up one of those books, it's just like blasts you in the face. How are you approaching layout and art direction? Are you looking at it as like, let's pull directly from Cyborg? Are you trying to do your own spin on it? And how are you approaching like that maximalist style of a Merkborg hack type game?
I don't do layout or art. Art is done by Roque Romero, who is a pretty prolific artist in the like OSR space. We just became friends talking about weird music on Twitter, honestly. And
hell yeah.
Like, I'll just like send him a random link, or, you know, we'll send each other songs and stuff. I'm also studying Spanish right now, and he lives in Spain, so he gives me music recommendations that I can listen to.
Nice.
Tony also is like somebody that the layout artist, somebody I interact with a lot, and we talk about different things. So constant communication, having good communication with people and being friends with them really helps convey a overarching style vision that, you know, we can all unite over. I sent Tony the PDF for recent Cyborg, a module called, or a set of supplements called Bankrupt Psy. Yeah, I just sent him the PDF. I'm like, let's do something like this. I think the two of them have such a clear sense of their artistic inclinations that it's going to end up being very unique and personal, but at the same time, in that iconic Merkborg style, but cyberpunk.
You mentioned that in the past zine months, you've just done itch funding, and this is sort of your first step into the crowdfunding space. So what made you want to take the plunge this year, and like, why zine month for that? Why backer kit?
Basically, in the past, I did itch funding because it seemed like a lower barrier of entry. But during zine month, it's actually a lot more work because it doesn't have the integrated ecosystem of advertising. So you're really hustling, actually, because there's no way to get people to see your game except for ads. Whereas if you're on Kickstarter or BackerKit or one of the platforms that has this zine month project going on, it seems like you'll just get better visibility. And actually talking with BackerKit, they were really helpful in setting up the page and gave a lot of advice, like just about using some of their more their functionality and setting up things that I hadn't really looked at because their website's kind of big and sprawling. So it was really nice for them to help out with that. Really, I hadn't decided, but other people on the project were just like, let's do BackerKit. Everybody's doing BackerKit this year. So I was like, great, okay.
Let's do it.
You know, listen to your friends. Find people you trust and just listen to them.
Yeah.
Amen to that. I know we're big fans of BackerKit. I think they just do a really good job, especially with smaller creators, of like bringing them in, helping them, like setting them up for success. And the platform is just does a lot to help you out, like help you get funded, which is always great to see.
Yeah, they're so helpful. Yeah.
With this first campaign with BackerKit, do you have anything that you have like lessons you've learned so far that you think would be helpful for people who are listening to this, thinking about maybe next year doing Zine Month with BackerKit?
Well, the biggest thing is start early. It's just a general zine month piece of advice.
Like, yeah.
Start early, get your teaser page going. And, you know, BackerKit really provides a nice service allowing for teaser pages, something we take for granted, but you need the platform to support that because I started promoting it 3 weeks early. My plan was to start it even later, but then Jordan, my editor, and Wilder Wim, one of the collaborators, was like, no, you got to start like months early and start sharing that teaser page like way early. So do the groundwork. I think that's the best piece of advice I could give to somebody.
I feel like with podcasting and with Elliot, I think with like your game design and crowdfunding efforts, like the thing that we just keep learning is do things earlier. And then we do them earlier and we learn, earlier.
Earlier. Even earlier.
Literally never stops.
I think on the flip side, though, I don't want to discourage people who are just like, you know, in January, they're like, oh, I got this cool idea. I'm going to zine month it. Just like,
yeah,
sure.
Do it too. But, you know, I guess gauge your expectations accordingly.
I totally agree.
But also, you know, do it, you know, get your feet wet.
Yeah.
There is very much like, don't let perfect be the enemy of good enough. You know, get it out there, make it happen. And really, especially during zine month, the thing that's great is even projects that aren't, you know, super well coordinated in terms of like, we've been doing this for months and months or whatever, still can really find a good home because people are just excited to try weird and interesting games. So if you have a good idea and are able to like, even sell it just a little bit in terms of how you're promoting it, there's a decent chance you'll be able to like fund your game as long as, you know, as you said, set your expectations properly. But this is just a community that's really excited to help people out. Like it will happen if you're involved in the community.
Yeah.
It's so cool how people will get so excited about just some little game. Like there's something really satisfying about seeing like a game with like a $150 goal just like get crazy funding, you know, and make it to like a few thousand or something.
Yeah.
It's just like really, you know, gives you the feeling of like somebody just doing what they love, you know, and putting some passion into something and then kind of lighting a spark.
I remember last year, there was the game Horse Majeure that was like a really small, like 8-page fold zine, I think. And it's like about two people in a horse costume, just like trying to find an apple.
Yeah.
And it's like the smallest little game, but I was rooting for it the whole zine month. And it way reached its funding because it was just like a very cute little game.
Its goal was $5, I think, on Kickstarter. Sure.
But it blew past it. But it did quite well. And I remember the whole month, I was just like, really cheering for this little game. I was like, if out of any of the games that I want to succeed, I want to see Horse Majeure do millions of dollars because it's just such a goofy little thing.
Sorry, it was a $2 goal, Canadian $2, and it raised $3,500.
Like, is that enough to buy a ream of paper even, like printer paper?
I think the fulfillment was all digital. I think that was like kind of it was all print and play.
Fun game. Cool stuff.
Yeah, that's what we, you know, that's what we love in the indie game space. You know, we want to see those people succeed.
Yeah, agreed. And then this is also a big kind of step up for you in terms of like managing a team, on this project. Like, is that new, like the amount of collaborators you're working with and people you're hiring on, like, especially if you hit all your stretch goals? I see there's a bunch of different writers.
Yeah, it's mostly the stretch goals that make it like a big unwieldy team, but I guess everybody is involved, in the discussions and planning. I think everybody's invested. I suppose it is more work, but I guess, you know, the lesson of prepare earlier has helped me out here. Like the whole game's written, including a lot of the stretch goals and play tested. I have a separate document for the campaign and like the flow of producing the game itself. It is a bigger project, but I guess I prepared more. So things seem to be flowing well.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you've got a bigger team. Can you tell us a little bit about the team that you have behind you and like shout out who's all helping and what they're doing in the project?
Yeah, sure. I talked about Roke and Tony, who are the artist and layout artist on this project. Yeah, they're both incredibly talented and, you know, have a million times better eye for design and style than I do. Also on the project is J.M. Bosch, Jordan Boschman. He's a
Oh, I think he was on this 2 years ago. Yeah, for Stone Flesh Gift. Yeah.
Yeah, he told me to apply for your podcast, actually.
Yeah, so thanks, Jordan.
That rules.
Yeah, Jordan's the man. So yeah, I met Jordan through gaming. He joined a game that I was in. Forget how exactly, but I found out about his Mothership crowdfunder and, you know, backed it, liked it a lot, and saw other work that he was doing with the Pirate Haven for Mothership. That was like a big collaborative project with a lot of other artists. And I guess, you know, just talking to him, it's so apparent that he has like such a like discerning eye for detail, and he catches things and picks up on things. He just seemed like a perfect choice for the editor, right? Somebody I know and I'm friends with, and also that I'm like amazed by how good of attention to detail that he has. I'm a little worried about him editing it because he's probably gonna, you know, really, really do some surgery on it, but that's, you know, that's what I want at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's a good editor.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, there's all the stretch goal writers too, who are different people that I've met either through gaming or I guess last year Wilder Wim, he did a Merc Borg album that's also a heavy metal album. So he's in the band and he wrote the game. I was like, that's just so awesome. So I was like a big fan of their campaign last year. And this year I was like, well, yeah, I want a metal album too. So added him on that. Brina Ratgirl Games, she joined the playtests earlier on from the EcoMorphos server. EcoMorphos. I guess it's the copy paste Discord server. Kaylin Ervin, also a stretch goal writer who joined the playtest through that server. And these are people, you know, I had known and been talking with before also. And you know, so we have similar aesthetic interests, and I think also, you know, line in worldview also. People of that Discord I can relate to a lot. And then lastly, John Irwin is a writer who I've been like, I guess, mutuals with on social media for a long time. He's always sort of just been a presence, and I always like agree with everything he says, but he's not super prolific, but he does make games, and I've been talking to him a little bit on copy paste Discord server as well. And I just invited him onto the game. He wrote Tunnel Goons hack called Galaxy Goons, which I think is really well done. So it shows like a good taste for, you know, science fiction. So it seems like he was also a good add-on for this project. Yeah, all people that, you know, I interacted with first and kind of was like, oh, this person's cool. And then later on wanted to collaborate with them. So it's just, yeah, it's really fun working on a project where everybody feel like I already know they align with me on vision or I align with them. And it's just fun to talk about the project. It doesn't feel like work at all. It just feels like a fun project that I'm doing with friends.
It's always great during, like, because we've done this Zine Month series for like, this is the third year now. And it's great to see people on teams start to crop up in other projects. So like, you know, having talked to Jordan last year or 2 years ago and now seeing him here, it's just, I love seeing more people start to like fill in the space in a really fun way. Like, it's why we love Zine Month. So many cool new people just start getting pulled into this world. And, you know, hopefully this is a great month to find like your next favorite game.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited.
As we kind of move towards an ending here, David, is there anything else that you want to make sure that we cover about the game?
You know, being cyberpunk and science fiction in general, I think it has something to say about the world. It's definitely not like an overt political message, but it is based on my, you know, feelings and observations about the world. I think the most overt political influence is probably, I saw a news article about how Elon Musk was making these brain chips and like was putting them in monkeys and the monkeys were all dying. And I was like, yeah, that's something that belongs in my game. Something kind of messed up from the real world. And brain stuff, you know, brains feature a lot in this game. Virtual reality servers hosted on human brains is like the perfect processor.
Mm.
That's an idea that comes from the Wachowski sisters. The original idea for The Matrix was that The Matrix is hosted on people's brains, but then the studio, I guess, cut that idea because it was too complicated.
So they made humans batteries instead.
Like, yeah, okay, scientifically, sure.
Why not? Sure.
Yeah, so I guess the influences are, it's not directly, like, I hate the idea of Elon Musk being the actual villain of the adventure, right? He's not. The villain is like a mega church pastor more. There are, it says something about, you know, alienation that exists in current society. And I think science fiction is a really good way to provide a social critique in a fun, you know, an exciting package.
And David, just to make sure we get it on mic, could you tell us where you're funding, when you're funding till, and what all people can get from the project when they back?
Yeah, so I am funding on Zinetopia on BackerKit. It's funding from the 2nd to the 27th. The basic physical tier, there's a digital tier also where you'll get all the rewards, but the basic physical tier is the zine, however long it ends up being. You know, each stretch goal adds a few pages. And then also the potential cyberpunk heavy metal album that gets recorded will also be included in that basic physical tier. So $20 for the zine or $20 for the zine and CD, depending on how far we go. There's also a sticker. I really should promote this more. There's a poll on the backer kit about what does the spaceship of the alien gods look like. I asked people to vote in the poll and comment, and you get like engagement points for that kind of thing. And if we get 666 engagement points from people voting and commenting, then we'll create a sticker of artwork of the spaceship that Roke will draw. And, you know, that artwork will be inspired by backer votes and stuff. So hopefully it'll be like a fun community engagement project, but it's kind of hidden on the page. And I don't think I did a well enough job of calling attention to it. So,
well, if you're listening, go vote.
Well, you have to back to vote. So back and vote.
Well, go back then vote. Yeah.
We're assuming people are backing.
But so that sticker will also be included in the physical tier.
Nice.
Oh yeah.
Love that you're doing an album of music. That's sick.
Yeah, we always love that.
Yeah, yeah. Wilderwind's bands, they're awesome. Sacred Bull.
David, as we start moving to an outro, we want to ask you our last question, which is the same question we ask to everyone who comes on the show, which is, what are you bringing to the table? And normally this is a space for you to recommend anything in the world, movies, books, TV, going out for a walk. But for Zine Month, we would love for you to recommend another project that is funding during Zine Month. So what would you like to bring to the table?
Yeah, I'll definitely bring Doors to Dementia to the table. It's the Zinetopia Zine Month project that Wilder Wim is doing. He's the drummer for Sacred Bull, and he's also a stretch goal writer for my project. He's writing, it's like a pseudo setting of a bunch of different pocket dimensions, and he also has rules for creating like the interconnections between the dimensions, and each one is a crazy unique little universe. He has a way of mixing modern elements with like medieval fantasy stuff that I think is really fun and modern, both kind of exciting and crazy, but also goofy and fun, which I think it really makes for fun, good gameplay.
We will put all those links in the show notes below so people can easily check that out. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Do you want to let people know where they can find you online if they're looking for you? And also remind people one more time where they can back this project.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate you guys, everything you do for the community. Like, I know it's a lot of work making a podcast, and supporting all these different creators is like crucial to the indie TTRPG ecosystem. So yeah, really appreciate that. You can find my project on Zinetopia, Dead Internet Theory. Yeah, I am on Blue Sky, Proton 31. You can also find my games on itch.io. I have a million crazy random little weird games that I've made there. So you can check those all out and download them too.
We'll throw all those links in the show notes below so you can check them out. Be sure to back Dead Internet Theory before Zine Month is over so we can hopefully also get a brand new album of excellent music.
And vote on the spaceship.
And vote on the spaceship. Don't forget to vote on the spaceship. David, thank you so much for coming to the table, and best of luck with the rest of Zine Month.
Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you so much for joining us for our Zine Month 2026 series. There are so many good projects that we talked about on this series, but there are also a ton more out there. So I encourage you, with these last few days of February, go and check them out. Back some cool, weird, wild indie games, and help some really cool new designers bring some fantastic new games into the world. If you want to support what we do here at Talk of the Table, the very best way to do that is becoming a member of the Many-Sided Media Patreon. For just a few bucks a month, you will get ad-free episodes, bonus roundtables, bonus video episodes, bonus actual plays of our podcast, My First Dungeon, even original music, and some borderline unplayable original games. All that and more, plus you will really help us continue to make this show, My First Dungeon, and all of the great new stuff that we have planned for 2026. Rate, review, and follow Talk of the Table wherever you get your podcasts, and that's what the table is talking about. Bye-bye, everybody.